Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. This week, we are bringing you a very special bonus episode. Today, we are with the absolutely incredible Sarah Ashcroft. Sarah is a lifestyle influencer with over 1.2 million followers and is founder of clothing label SLA The Label. I read in an interview that she said she started the incredibly successful and lucrative brand from her parents' bedroom at the age of 25. When I read that, I thought, that's really fucking cool. I am always so excited to speak to successful female entrepreneurs, so I really cannot wait to hear the three defining moments that led Sarah to where she is today. Hi!
Hello, my God, what an intro.
One of my longer intros. I was so impressed, honestly, reading about you. I was like, oh, I can't wait to speak to you.
It's honestly so funny when you come on a podcast and you hear someone talk about you. It's like the weirdest thing.
I totally get it. So, Sarah, we on this show go straight in to your first defining moment.
It was so funny. I was talking to my parents about the fact that I was coming on this podcast because I was saying, I'm going on this podcast that I listen to all the time. And all day, you know, we jump straight into defining moments in life. And I said to my mum, I was like, what's a defining moment in my life? Because I laughed with her and I said, I'm 27 years old and I don't feel like anything that defining has happened to me. And she went, Sarah, are you being serious? And I went, yeah. I was like, I really can't think of anything. She went, you have got to be joking. She was like, you've got a fashion blog, you've got a clothing label, and you're sitting here saying you haven't got any defining moments, which honestly was hilarious. I bet you've never had a guest come on here.
I actually have never heard that before.
Anyway, so then I started thinking and I was like, I really put me to, it was almost like doing homework this, but it was great fun doing it. So I started thinking, and actually when I started thinking, I came up with loads. So you'll be pleased to know there is content coming. So I would say for me, my first defining moments in my life would have to be when I started out, you know, when you've got your sort of Saturday jobs and you're working in retail or you're working in supermarkets and you're just doing anything to kind of get money. Mm-hmm. I had my first sort of job where I was working. I've always worked in retail, so I worked in this really small little boutique in my local town. And I wanted to work in fashion because I knew that fashion was something that I always wanted to do. And I just absolutely hated every minute of it. I hated every single second of going to work. I used to cry when I had to go to work in the morning. It was just so like not what I wanted to do. It was funny. So I was there for a year and then I actually left and I went to Monsoon Accessorize and I did, I think I did about 2 years there. I did it when I was at college. Mm. And when I was there, I realized that while I was working at Monsoon, I kept being dragged into the changing room with women who would want like personal styling from me while I was there. Cause you know, they'd walk in, they'd be like, oh, I love what you're wearing. Could you help me? I've got a wedding this weekend and I need to put an outfit together. So I found myself sort of standing in the change room with these middle-aged women dressing them for their events. Mm. And it was funny because, you know, after having a job before that in a retail shop that I really didn't like, then, you know, still working retail, but having found this sort of different aspect of it and, you know, something that was definitely not in my job role at the time, I sort of realized that there was, you know, there was a passion there within fashion that I sort of didn't realize was there before. So it was quite funny, but I was always, you know, I always wanted to do something different. Every single day I went to work, I wanted to find something that was different. And I think that was why it was so defining for me, because that almost was when I first realized that whatever I did with my life, I knew I was going to have to create something that would allow me to live and have the job that I chose. So it was quite funny because I actually, when I left that job, because as you can probably tell, I jumped around a lot because I really struggled to find, you know, the thing that I was really passionate about. And I actually went for a job. I went to try and get a Christmas job because I was also like, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, lie and not say I'm not. I was also super driven by money. And so I was constantly looking for, like, you know, when you're younger and you just try and get, like, you get paid by the hour. And I was always looking for something that would pay me a bit more money, basically, so that I could buy more clothes. Honestly, it was to fund my clothing addiction. I went for a job as a Christmas elf at Harrods.
And I was like,
this is like literally being in Elf the movie. I was like, this is my dream. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go along for this interview. And I was so excited. I literally thought of spending my Christmas dress as an elf for entertaining children. So I went to the Harrods head offices, you know, was really all ready for this interview. And I walked through the door and the two interviewers were like, you know, we really love your CV, but you're actually overqualified. And we'd really love to offer you a job in retail. And you can imagine at the time I was thinking, I don't want to do that. I've literally just left like a retail job. I don't want to be offered another job in retail. So I went along for the interview for that. And it was actually to work for the brand Zadig & Voltaire. And at the time I was just like, I really know that I don't want to work in retail. So I turned down that job and I ended up getting a job for a promo company. But basically it's like, you know, for example, I don't know, let's use an example of if you were at a festival and someone was handing out Tic Tacs because you're working for Tic Tac, it was those kind of people that would hand out the free samples to you.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Because I was able to kind of work whatever hours I chose. And, you know, I could do, the money was amazing, which was also really good. And it was just that every single day was different. So I suppose to sum up like all of that, when I look back on all the different jobs I have, it's sort of, you know, jumping from so many different jobs and trying so many different things out, I think really made me realize that whatever I was going to do in my life, I had to be super passionate about it, because it made me realize that I was not someone to stick with something if I didn't like it. And then it was quite funny because my mum, actually, when I was talking to her about this podcast, she was like, I feel like you feel like you've got no defining moments in your life because you are such a headstrong person that nothing was going to deviate you from your plan. She was like, you were basically born with a plan. And I was like, do you think that? She was like, yeah. She was like, and that's why I think you feel like you don't have any defining moments, because for you, you've always known that you were going to end up doing something like you're doing, even from a young age. She's like, you know, you didn't want to walk until you were two because you wanted to bottom shuffle the whole time, because you were like, no, I'm going to walk when I'm ready. She was like, I would put clothes out for you on your bed and you'd go and put a completely different outfit on because that was what you wanted to do. We'd turn up to parties and it'd be like a pirate theme party and everyone would be inside and I'd be outside picking flowers because that was what I wanted to do. And so she said, you know, I think you just have always been a very headstrong, independent person. So I think from a young age, I've kind of, I don't know, just been like that, I suppose.
I love that. And it's almost, for me, that really speaks of like, I always talk about like natural manifestors. And I always look at people who are successful and what kind of traits they have. And for someone that seems to like manifest naturally, it is this like unwavering confidence and this blind knowing that you don't know how, but you just know it is going to work out the way that you want it to.
Yeah.
And you seem to possess that.
By the way, your book is one of my favorites because I'm so into manifestation and law of attraction. Like it's such a big thing in my life. And it's funny because actually you saying that, you know, you've probably summed it up, because I do think that I've always had a feeling that I was always going to do something different. And, you know, and maybe that was actually, you know, you've almost made me think maybe that was it. Maybe I was just manifesting from a really, really young age. I don't know.
I think definitely that's what you know, everybody's got that friend like you who is just that seemingly like lucky person, but it's not luck. It's just a drive, persistence, faith. Yeah. You know, you're not being deterred by things not going right. I think it's actually really interesting hearing you talk about having had lots of different jobs. And I think it can be really reassuring for young people or anyone really, because there is this period of time where you're kind of flitting between things, not really knowing or not really enjoying it and feeling like, oh, I don't know what my passion is. Yeah. But it seems from the way you're describing it that you weren't kind of fazed by that at the time. You were like, right, I'm going to try something new. Whereas we can get quite upset in that space and be like, oh no, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. But you seem to just be like, right, no, I'm going to find it.
I think that's the thing. And I think young people these days put so much pressure on themselves to like know, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go to uni and I'm going to get a degree in, you know, law. Or I'm going to be a doctor. Or I'm going to be a teacher. Or I'm going to do. And it's like everyone has to know what they want to do. But I think there's something so beautiful in like not knowing what your passion is and trying loads of different things and trying to work out what it is that really excites you. And actually, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the fact that I'd had so many different jobs and, you know, had hated so many different aspects of it, but it's also taught me what I wanted, what I didn't want. And so, yeah, I think there is something so in just, you know, keep going around and trying different things until you do start to find what you really enjoy doing, I think.
Absolutely. So then, Sarah, what was your second defining moment?
So for me, I suppose kind of like leading on from that is what, you know, while I was having all of these jobs, I was at school, obviously. So I was doing my A-levels and, you know, I was never academically clever at school. And that was always, you know, like school wasn't easy for me. I was very creative. I've always been super creative, but like, you know, I wasn't an A, like straight A student. You know, it was hard. I was always in like the bottom sets of all of my classes, you know, like bottom set for maths, all that sort of stuff. But I think in a way that was what I think has kind of defined my life, because I think by not being academically clever, I knew that uni wasn't for me. And so I didn't go to uni. And I think from not going to uni is obviously a massive defining moment in my life, because that's such a big decision at a young age, because it was so different from what all my friends were doing, because all my friends went to uni apart from I think maybe one. She went to uni, but she was living at home. So it was a big decision at the time, but it was just because I thought I don't want to go and do another 3 years of something academic that I'm not going to enjoy and doing all, you know, the exams and all that stuff that I just hated. And also, again, you know, I just knew that I wanted to start making money from, you know, straight away. I didn't want to do anything else but make money. So I actually did a year course at the Fashion Retail Academy in London, because I think the fear of not doing something, you know, course wise did scare me a little bit. So I did this year long course, and that was actually really exciting, because it was called the Level 3 Diploma in Fashion Retail, which sadly they don't do anymore, which is such a shame, because I would always love to recommend it to girls who are unsure of what they want to do in the fashion industry. But I think they do similar things. And it was basically like a mixture of styling, buying, PR, visual merchandising, managing, all in like all aspects of fashion. So it was perfect, because it was great for me, because I knew I wanted to work in fashion, but I didn't know what. So I did that the year course there, and I left and I really wanted to work in fashion PR. So I went to so many job interviews, and in the job interviews, they would ask me, you know, do I have a blog and all this sort of stuff. And at the time I was thinking, what's a blog? Like, I wouldn't even read them. I had no idea. Right. And so I remember going home to my mum one night, and I was like, Mum, I'm going to have to start a blog, because I want to be able to, when I'm asked in an interview, say, yes, I've got a blog. Because I think...
So you'd started it to be a fashion PR?
Because I think it was about 2013, and it was just as, you know, the social media space was growing, you know, in the word influencer wasn't even a thing yet.
Yeah.
Really just like these real OG bloggers that were around. And I think they wanted to employ, you know, like a young, you know, starter person who could run a blog for their PR and be on that sort of space. So I was literally like, I just want to be able to sit in an interview and go, yeah, I've got a blog, just so they would probably hire me. It was really bizarre. And so, I started it because of that. And I think that, you know, none of that would have happened if I'd gone to uni, because that was only a year after I left college that I started my blog. And there's not a chance that I would have had a blog if I was at uni. I would have been getting pissed with my mates. And, you know, that was what was happening. So I think, you know, having that sort of, you know, that those early stages of going to job interviews, like way before, your sort of like friends and all that sort of stuff. It was kind of scary. So that's, I think, why I started the blog, because I wanted to do anything I could to make sure I got myself a job. Especially because I was that one friend that didn't go to uni. I didn't want to be that person that then ended up with no job either.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then the blog started, and it was wild.
Do you remember what your first ever post was?
Oh my God, literally, I remember it so clearly. I was wondering, do you know what the worst thing was? I went through a phase, like, oh, I don't even know when it was, probably like 4 years ago, and I deleted all of my old blog posts. And
oh no!
Because I think it was when I was in that stage, you know, where you think you're really cool. You're like, now I look back at it and I'm like, I'd love to look at them, but when I back then, it was sort of like, oh my God, I need these off the internet ASAP, you know. I'm actually so annoyed at my younger self,
because amazing,
almost neon blue coat from River Island that had like neon flowers all over it, and like the OG followers will remember that look because it was quite iconic. And I used to take all my pictures just out in the garden. My mum would take them, and I'd stand up against the wall of my house, and they were honestly shocking. Like the, but it worked, you know. Like back in the day, that's what people wanted.
Why do you think it worked? What do you think people saw in your posts that seemed to like resonate?
Do you know what? I say this whenever I get asked this question, but I think it's because I wasn't trying. Like, because for me, that blog was to get me a job, you know? So it wasn't like I thought my blog was going to become anything. It was purely so I could get myself a job. And I think that that sort of natural way that I was treating the blog and being very just like myself and, you know, when you don't try at something, it comes almost naturally.
Well, it's probably because in a sense, you know, with any time we're trying to perfect something or those kind of perfectionist tendencies come out, they always block us. So if you were actively trying to like make a blog and really make it a success, you might actually stop yourself posting like 50% of the shit that you do because you're like, oh crap, it might not be good enough or whatever.
100%.
But whereas when you haven't got that pressure on yourself, you're actually just posting more, you're more natural, like everything.
Literally, it was such an innocent time back then as well, because it was so like the blogging industry was so new and it was so like real. Like I can't even, like the fact that standing out in your garden with like your bush in the background and your tree and your plant pot that's smashed and, you know, up against the weird brick wall was what people wanted to see. I mean, imagine doing that these days on Instagram. Like everything's going to be so polished and perfect. So there was something so nice about it. But I mean, obviously it's still great these days, but like it was so, just as I say, it was like I had this sense of just like innocence around it, I guess.
Yeah.
So that obviously was like a huge, huge defining moment, because if I had not gone to uni, if I had gone to uni even, I just think my life would have panned out so, so different. But again, it is one of those things where I reckon I knew from almost about 13 that I wasn't going to go to uni. It just was never in the cards for me. And yeah, I just think it then led me down a completely different road that I just would never have ever imagined would happen, I guess.
Well, I think that is, you know, I think when you started talking and you're saying, you know, at school, I didn't feel like, you know, academia was my strength, let's say. I think there's actually so much power in also just being able to know what you're not good at, as well as knowing what you are good at. And if exams and all of that wasn't for you, being able to go, you know what, that isn't for me, that isn't what makes, rather than kind of berating yourself for it or then comparing yourself to your friend, just going, do you know what, that is just not for me, and therefore uni isn't for me, and being okay with that is so powerful.
100%. And I think, you know, again, it goes back to that sort of pressure that people put on themselves, which I'm such an advocate for. Whenever I talk to, like, you know, I've got a lot of followers that will message me and they'll be like, oh, you know, I don't know what to do with my life and I haven't got a plan, and you know, my friends are thinking of going to uni and I don't want to go, but I feel like I need to go. And it is obviously such a thing, but I just want people to know that it's not, you know, not knowing is actually an amazing thing. And I'm a big believer in a gut instinct, and I think if you've got your gut instinct telling you to do something, it's normally right. And so I think, you know, I always had a gut feeling that uni was just not going to be for me. And it did, you know, pan out that way.
And it worked out for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one. But I think if there's any takeaway from this, I think it is just knowing that. And also, like, even later down the line, you know, even if you have gone to uni and you've done all that, but you still don't feel like you're doing the right thing, there is absolutely nothing wrong with stopping and starting something completely different. Because I've got so many friends that have done that, and they're actually now they found their passion in life. And, you know, almost starting again was the best thing that they ever did.
I love that. Such great advice.
Welcome to Paranormal Activity with me, Yvette Fielding, a brand new podcast bringing together people's real ghost, extraterrestrial and paranormal stories, as well as getting some inside details from those who study the supernatural. I'll be listening through your paranormal stories every week and try to understand them, as well as chatting about my own encounters with an occasional paranormal investigator too. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts from, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast. Just search for Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So then, Sarah, what was your third defining moment?
So, I mean, I suppose the whole of like the blogging, you know, it's sort of... The second one kind of like goes into the third. There's almost like a halfway defining one, really, I suppose, was growing up, you know, spending the majority of my 20s with, you know, a following, which is a really bizarre way to grow up. And, you know, I've honestly had like some insane experiences alongside of it. And I feel so lucky to have the job that I have. But it has also equally been, you know, there's been some hard times thrown in there as well. I think, you know, trying to grow up in and also be aware of like not, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's sort of like I felt like in this industry, when you grow up, you feel like you are quite headstrong and you've always got opinions, but the opinions might not be what other people want to hear. And I think that's been quite hard growing up. So I think having the job that I've had, it's sort of made me feel like I can't have an opinion. I think that's been quite hard. And that's definitely like defined me as a person. It's made me, it's potentially a little bit, I suppose if anything, the blogging industry has sort of affected my anxiety. Like, sadly, I suffer really badly from anxiety now and social anxiety. So I suppose my job has sort of brought that on, which is very defining, because if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have anxiety, which is sort of the dark side, I suppose, of social media, because of obviously you're growing up with the pressures of other people's opinions and, you know, how you look and all that sort of stuff all the time, which can be really hard. And I think because of, you know, it'll be 9 years in September that I would have had my blog, which is just crazy because it's almost a decade. I think, you know, you can't do anything for 9 years and it not have an effect on you. And I think because of the way that the industry has become, it's almost the reason as to why I started SLA, because the pressures of the industry, they do get a lot. And I think I knew, you know, I loved, obviously, you know, for the first like 3, 4, 5 years, I was just in my element. It was my dream. I loved it. I loved taking pictures. I loved working with brands, and I loved, you know, creating content every single day. But after a while, that becomes a lot, and you sort of think, it's really weird. It's like I was laughing at my friend the other day saying, I will drive along a street, and instead of just looking out the window and looking at how nice the houses are, I will look at it and think, oh, that'd be a really nice place to take a picture. And I'm like, why does my brain now work like that? And it's because it's been so programmed to do that for so long.
Yeah.
And I think that it's weird, because it's like a defining moment that's not necessarily good, because it has changed like my who I am as a person, I think. And I think because of that and the pressures of it is why I wanted to start SLA, because I knew that it wasn't a sustainable kind of like phrase to stay in, because obviously the pressures of creating content every single day and making sure that you've uploaded something, or you've done a YouTube video, or you've done stories, you've done this, you've done that, that pressure just gets so much. And I think I knew that there was always something more for me out there. And also, I think, you know, when you've worked so hard for so long to build up such like an amazing, loyal fan base, I wanted to turn that into something that was mine. Mm-hmm. So I think SLA starting was obviously a massive defining moment for me, because it was such a big step to turn, you know, what was essentially something quite simple, you know, like taking photos of yourself and, you know, styling clothes and doing YouTube videos is a completely different ballgame to running a business. Mm-hmm. I think no one tells you how hard it is until you do it.
Yeah.
And but it's good, because I think, as I say, I always felt like there was something more, and doing the influencer stuff almost became a little bit easy, to the point where I love it, but it was like I needed something more to wake up to in the mornings than just thinking, okay, what Instagram picture am I going to take today?
Because yeah,
that's just not, you know, it's not, it didn't kind of excite me anymore. So starting SLA was huge for me. And it was just, yeah, I mean, obviously we're still very much in the early stages now, so it's super fresh, but it's just been a complete dream to have something that is just so my own. I always say that it's like I've got a child all of a sudden.
Yeah, totally.
I honestly feel like it is my baby. And I feel like you probably feel the same way with your book, you know, when you put something out and you've worked so hard on it.
Of course. And
you know, the response is really good. You just feel, I don't know, it's just this weird sense of like, it's kind of accomplishment, but obviously it's so early on that I'm like, I've got so far to go, and like there's so much more to do. But it's been a wild ride, should we say.
I think it's incredible. And before I talk a bit more about SLA, I want to go back, if you don't mind, and talk a little bit about the anxiety and the social anxiety, because I think that, of course, in what I do, you know, mental health and openness and vulnerability is really important.
Yeah.
And I think anxiety is just, we feel so alone in it as well. Yeah. I think it, no matter how much you hear people talk about it, I think you always feel comforted when you hear someone new talk about it, because, you know, it feels really debilitating, and everyone experience of it is so different. So could you talk to me a little bit, if you don't mind, about when anxiety began for you, what you think specifically about social media was causing it, and also a little bit about the social anxiety as well?
I think it was probably the bigger I got, obviously, the more you're reaching people who don't necessarily know you as well as those people who have been around for, you know, with you from the beginning. So that's when you start to, you know, receive like your hate comments and your people that, you know, they don't, you know, they just don't see you for like what you are. And I think when you start to get like the negativity on social media, you know, when you get that on like a daily basis, or you start to receive comments like that, it does affect you mentally. So then you start like, you know, doubting yourself, and you start like questioning what you're doing. And I think then when that is a, you know, happens over a course of like a month, and then a month turns into a year, that then really does become anxiety. You know, it's like starts from something so small, but that small thing, if it's not dealt with, which mine wasn't, because at the time I didn't realize it was actually going to be a problem. It just then grows and grows and grows. And then now it's become such a part of my life, the anxiety. Like some days it's great, but then other days I will literally just wake up and not want to get out of bed. And you can't even describe it, can you? I mean, it is the hardest thing to talk about, because when someone's like, oh, but what does it feel like? I'm like, I can't even tell you. It's just, I know that something's not right that day and I don't want to do anything. I just don't feel like doing anything. And it is sad, because I feel like it's a shame that the job that I love and I'm so passionate about has also created anxiety in my life, because I was not an anxious person. I'm honestly like the most confident person, especially in social situations. I was always like, you know, probably the loudest person in the room. And so it is quite sad that it has, you know, changed that aspect. And it's something that I definitely am trying to deal with at the moment, because I haven't properly dealt with it, I don't think. And so it's something I do need to work on, I think, in the next year. But it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a journey. And just to say that, you know, I am really sorry that you've been through that, and that you have days like that. It's not easy. And I really can't, you know, I feel very, I don't know, I have a lot of empathy for, you know, I've had a few, you know, of the OG bloggers on here. And I really feel for you guys, because I think having people watch your every move, having the trolls, having the comments, it is a lot. And I can imagine that, I don't know, I'm just making assumption here, but I can imagine that on some level, when you, like anybody that's famous or a celebrity, when people have such a perceived perception of like this online version of you, there's a feeling of whenever you meet anyone or someone comes up to you or whatever, or you're in a social situation, you feel that you have to live up to this expectation of what they've painted of you on social media.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, I always think my anxiety within the social media space stems from, you know, it's almost like the guilt of having anxiety, because I'm like, I chose to have this job. Like, I created this. Mm. And also, I'm so lucky to be in this position, because, you know, it is a dream job for so many people. And I'm so aware of how, you know, lucky I am to be able to have a job that allows me to travel and, you know, pick my working hours and do all that sort of stuff. But I think that then makes me anxious, because then when I feel anxious, I'm like, oh my God, but I'm so lucky. So why do I feel like this?
Yeah.
And making it worse. And I think that is because I do speak to a lot of my sort of influencer friends, and they also do. It's actually wild how many influencers do struggle with anxiety.
Yeah. And start to struggle with social anxiety.
Honestly, and I think for me, I mean, obviously I am no Kim Kardashian, and I'm not trying to say I am, but when I go out, obviously there are girls who do notice me, or, you know, will say hi, and or some people won't say hi, but they'll, you know, point to their friend or whisper, and you'll walk past and they'll go, oh, Sarah Ashcroft. And obviously it's lovely. It's so amazing that these people, you know, recognize you, and that, you know, but when that happens over a large period of your life, that actually has created the social anxiety. Like, I hate going to like food shops by myself, walking to a shopping center, absolutely not. It's so weird because it's like those little things that were so normal back in the day. Like, I have to be always with someone, or if I'm not, I will be like power walking through, because it's like guaranteed not one person in that supermarket knows who I am, but my brain is telling me that everyone is looking at me.
Right.
It's honestly so bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I get it.
Do you get it when you are out and about? And like, so it's, and it is obviously, you know, it's not even saying that I don't like it. Like, when people come up to me, I love that, because that's what I live for, is meeting my followers, because, you know, I don't just put this stuff out to no one. Like, I love knowing who it's going to. It's weird how it's like something good that I love is also kind of creating something bad, because it's like the fear of, I don't even know what it is, but it's social anxiety is actually one of the weirdest things, I'd say.
It is. It's like, it's a fucking minefield anyway, the whole thing, isn't it? We're all just trying to navigate it as best we can. And I think that
my boyfriend, actually, he owns a marketing company, so he kind of works in the social media space, and he deals with a lot of influencers. And we were talking about it the other day, and we were saying that there really isn't enough like mental health help out there for people in the public eye, for like social media, like influencers and stuff, because trying to find like people to go and talk to without feeling like you're because I said to Joe, I was like, oh, I really would love to go and speak to someone, but what am I going to do? Sit on a couch and say, oh, I'm really sad because my Instagram post didn't get enough likes last night and now I feel really like crap about myself. Like, that sounds stupid. So I was like, I would, you know, I feel like there needs to be like specialist therapists and people that, you know, an influencer feels comfortable going to talk to, because you feel like these are first world problems, you know, when you're saying
that.
So it's quite.
I think influencers do have it hard because there is a lot of potential for judgment and for people to think that like everything does look so good on the outside, because that is the nature of social media. People who are you know, doing those jobs, you know, on social media probably definitely feel too afraid or too embarrassed to say, oh, actually, this is making me feel really bad.
I think it's that imposter syndrome, isn't it? Because it's like you're putting out this like beautiful, happy, rose-tinted glasses life. But then if you feel anxious on the inside, then you're like, oh God, but that's not how I feel. And then it kind of like makes it worse. So it is, it's an interesting one. And I'm such an advocate for talking about it, because I also think, you know, if anyone else feels like it, it's, you know, to let people know they're not alone. Because I think a lot of people can almost be embarrassed to admit that they struggle with anxiety, or they struggle with social anxiety, or, you know, they want to talk to someone. Whereas, like, you know, especially on my YouTube channel, I'm always saying, you know, like, I really want to speak to someone, you know, I'm all open for trying therapy and all that sort of stuff. But it's just trying to get through the door, I think, at the moment, that's the hardest thing.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I want to go back to SLA, the label.
Yes.
So how many years has it been since you started now?
So it'll be 3 years in June, which is exciting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, and we've obviously like evolved a lot, because we started as predominantly loungewear, which was kind of a dream for me, because who doesn't want to just live in sweatshirts and joggers and sort of make money off it? And it was great. And I, weirdly enough, throughout my career, I'd gotten really known for my airport outfits, which was slightly odd, but I love dressing for the airport. It's almost as important as what's in my suitcase. But so I like my loungewear looks always really good. So it was a natural sort of thing to start with that. But, you know, having lockdown, I think lockdown and, you know, COVID has affected so many businesses in so many ways. And it's actually, you know, SLA Lux, which we launched in June last year, was born out of lockdown, because I didn't want to put on another pair of joggers or a sweatshirt again. All I wanted to do was wear sequins and sparkles and, you know, look fantastic. And I think, honestly, if it wasn't for lockdown, I'm not sure that would have happened. So it's been quite interesting, really, because now we've got SLA and SLA Lux. We've kind of grown out of lockdown and it's been really good. So I'm excited for this year, because we've got so many new things and we've got different, yeah, you know, we've got a brand new swim collection and beachwear and all this sort of stuff coming that we haven't really done before. It's just great fun. Honestly, I absolutely love it. I feel like it's taken me 27 years, well, maybe a bit less, but 27 years to fully find my passion. My, you know, monsoon working self would never quite believe that I've finally done it, but I have. She's found it.
Unbelievable. Good for you. And honestly, I'm going to get my hands on some for my holidays, because I absolutely have been checking it out. I'm just like, yep, need.
I know. Well, if you need anything sparkly, you know where to come. We love a sparkle at SLA. I'm like, anything glittery, I'm like, just put it, and bright colours. I'm all for bright colours.
Amazing. Well, Sarah, thank you so, so much for coming on as a guest. And before you go, I've got some quick fire questions for you.
Yes.
So the first one is, what is your most memorable book?
So I think for me, I mean, I'm not a massive reader, I must say. I actually got into reading in lockdown, but I think my most memorable book, and I think the book that really changed my life, was Reading the Secret, because that was my first real like introduction to like the actual power of manifesting and the law of attraction and all that. So definitely changed my life reading that.
What is your favorite quote?
So my favorite quote is the Dr. Seuss one, which is, be who you are and say how you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind.
I just think
it's such a good quote.
It's beautiful. Who is your most influential mentor?
So I think it would have to be my mum, which I know is probably quite cliche, but she has just been such an amazing just role model on like of how to live your life and be positive and be friendly. And she's just taught me such amazing core values that I wouldn't be who I am without my mum. So it is quite cliche, but it's just so true.
I think it's so sweet. You've mentioned your mum a few times and I'm like, oh my God, like the sweetest. I just love like...
My mum's also my PA, so we work together a lot. So
no way.
Yeah, we've got a really interesting relationship, but we spend a lot of time together.
Oh my God, I'm so here for this. That's incredible. Oh my God, I love it. Your go-to feel-good film?
It's probably kind of, it's quite random, but Inside Out, the Pixar film.
No.
Oh my God, it's...
I'm like, no, I do not know it.
It's unbelievable.
Inside Out.
You know how like Pixar films have always got like another level?
Yeah,
like the kids love it, but actually if you watch it as an adult, you're like,
definitely. Oh my God.
It is so beautiful. And it's just, honestly, if you do one thing, please just watch it.
Like, I'm going to watch it with Wolf.
Oh my God, and he's going to love it. But honestly, like, it's insane. It's such a beautiful movie.
Okay, amazing. Thank you. Great tip. a moment where you felt most proud?
I think it would probably definitely have to be launching SLA.
Mm.
Yeah.
A song that cheers you up?
Oh, there's so many. I love music. I'm always like dancing around the kitchen. I just think it's so great. But I think my favorite song, which is, I mean, probably people haven't heard of it. It's called Feels Great, which probably is great for the title. But it's by Cheat Codes. And it just reminds me of such good times. I've just always played it when I've been like in just really happy. You know, when songs just remind you
of
good times. That's, yeah, such a good feel good song.
Love that. Your top tip for dealing with stress?
So, I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that I'm good at it because I'm not. I'm actually really bad at dealing with stress. But I think for me, the one thing that I always make sure I try and do when I'm feeling really stressed and I want to, you know, kind of take myself away from it, is just always make sure you've got life outside of, well, for me, it's life outside of business. So, you know, whether that's just like going for a dinner party with your friends on the weekend or like, you know, even something as simple as just going for a dog walk and like taking yourself and just living life that's not always in that bubble of stress. So I think that's, for me, is like a bit, it's almost like my therapy. It's just spending time doing things that have nothing to do with influencing and nothing to do with SLA, you know?
Yeah, I really actually relate to that, because when you work for yourself, I think anyone will feel the same. It just takes over your life unless you like, because you live and breathe it. You don't switch off at 5 p.m.
I think if you own your own business, like, you've got to be honest and be like, you know, this is 24/7, 7 days a week, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because I think it's your passion. That's what happens. But I think you've just got to make sure that there are those good fun times alongside of it to keep you sane.
Totally agree. What is, I'm going to ask you this, actually, I want to know, what's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure is country music.
Really?
I love it. I also love to line dance. Which is...
Stop. Yeah. Wow, I'm into this.
Shit-faced at a party and be like, guys, do you want to see something fun? And I'll just start line dancing. It's hilarious.
Amazing.
I put myself in like Nashville or something. And like, me and my element, like, honestly, I'm obsessed. It's so funny, right? Because I'm going to Coachella, actually. I leave tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Coachella is obviously like, I think it's like a month or a weekend before that. You know, they've got Stagecoach, that festival in LA. So yeah. Stagecoach is basically the country music version of Coachella. And every single time I go to Coachella, I think, do you know what? I'd actually rather just be going to Stagecoach. So funny.
Oh my God, you're going to have so much fun.
I know, I can't wait. But yeah, I'll just pretend in my head I'll be playing country music.
Dress for it. I could see you dressing the part very well. One thing you'd like to achieve in the next year?
To be honest, it would probably be to deal with my anxiety. It's been like, it's a New Year's resolution, but I just think I need to stop putting it off and go and like get, because you know there is help out there for it, and I need to stop being my own worst enemy and sort it out.
100%. Well, if you ever need someone to talk to, just, I'm always here.
Thank you. That's so kind.
And the last question is, who is the first person you called to share good news?
It would have to be my boyfriend, Joe. He's just number one. And when he doesn't pick up, I'm like, that's just rude. Like, how busy. I've got something so, it could be something so small as like, I found mini eggs in the shop. But if he doesn't pick up, I'm like, this is exciting. Okay.
Oh, Sarah, you have been such a pleasure to talk to, honestly.
I feel like I've been like a table tennis match. I'm like all over the place, but.
Are you joking? I'm so here for your energy. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm really so honoured.
Oh, I've really loved talking to you, and I can't wait to see what's next, and I will keep watching you and following you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening. And I just wanted to let you all know that we are going to be taking a break from this podcast just for a little while. But I really wanted to say thank you so much for all your listens, shares, and of course to all the incredible guests who have so vulnerably shared their three defining moments that got them to where they are today. Don't worry, we will be back with more moments and more incredible guests. See you soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.